going on, everyone? Welcome to One Man's Opinion Podcast. I am your host, Noah Gillian. So happy you decided to join in today. It is the 5th of January, 2022. Happy New Year. And we are here today to recap another great week in sports. On today's episode, we're going to be going over the divisional matchup between the Eagles and the football team from week 17, as well as take a look around the rest of the league. Before we get started, if you want to follow us on social media, you can follow me on Twitter at Noah Gillian, and you can find the show's account at One Man's Opinion 17. So without further ado, let's just get right into it.
What's that? Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
Yes, indeed. The Philadelphia Eagles will be playing football in the postseason this year. The Eagles did their part this weekend, taking down Washington in Landover, Maryland, 20-16 on Sunday during the 1 o'clock window. They needed a few other things to break their way, in which did happen. We'll talk about that in the second topic of the pod today. But in terms of this game against the football team, It was another NFC East battle for the Eagles that was totally reminiscent of the first encounter when it came to going against a divisional opponent. They did the same thing with the Giants earlier this year. The second game, at least in the first half, it felt like an exact replica of the first game, and this game against the football team was no different. Washington goes up 10-0 early. Our offense turns it over, except this time it was a turnover on downs. Late or deep in Washington territory, so it's a little bit more reasoning there. But the football team's offense did look like it came out and played a little bit of inspired football after getting absolutely embarrassed in Dallas last Sunday night. So it was definitely a good effort from the football team. They came out, got a touchdown. Running back Jarrett Patterson was filling in for Antonio Gibson, who was on the COVID. Was on the COVID list, so he missed the game. And without him, you know, Jarrett Patterson really handled the load, and he did his thing for Washington, especially on that first drive, made a nice little 10-yard touchdown run. But after that, they got some more things going. But, you know, what it came down to for the Eagles was a lot of late-game execution and you know, critical execution on third down and fourth down specifically, which I'll talk about in a few. But this game, like I said, was very reminiscent of the first game. The Eagles definitely got it going after being down 10-0. And while they didn't, you know, put up 30 points like they did the previous matchup, it definitely felt like their offense found a groove in this one. And they did a lot of good things statistically. You know, outgained Washington football team, had more time of possession during the game. So while the Washington football team did get out early, there was a lot to like in this game from the Philadelphia Eagles, in a game where they had to win with some other help to get into the postseason. So kind of going deep into our breakdown, which we usually go follow the same format every time. You know, we're leading off with Jalen Hurts. Starting with Jalen this week, 17 for 26. He went 214 yards. Also carried the ball 7 times for 44 yards. First game in a while, Hurts hasn't had any touchdowns accounted for. It was a somewhat unimpressive stat line from the young man, however, I came away extremely, extremely impressed. Like, I came away extremely impressed from what I saw from number one. You know, his poise in the pocket was one thing that I noticed as a huge reason why he was so successful, you know, in keeping drives alive and putting enough points on the board to win the ball game. There was one specific example I remember after I was going back and watching it, you know, in the second quarter. There was this 3rd and 8 from, you know, Philadelphia's own 26-yard line. And he made a play that not many quarterbacks in the league can make. I counted like 4 Washington football team defenders that were running at him. And he evaded multiple guys. You know, he dropped back, moved to the left to avoid some guys from the right, moved up to evade the corner pressure off the left. And then he almost did like a little LeSean McCoy jump cut in the pocket to kind of evade that nose tackle. And when he looked up, you know, a ton of green grass in front of him, and he scampered for about 25 yards. It was as impressive of a play as I've seen from a quarterback this year, and it just goes to remind you with Jalen Hurts, you know, how special, you know, athletically he is. And, you know, what he can provide for an offense going forward. You know, a lot has been kind of chronicled about his passing woes and how his arm may or may not be good enough for, you know, a starting quarterback in the NFL. You know, we've obviously had a ton of discussion about that over, you know, the last year on Jalen Hurts. However, you know, it's these things that when you see improvement in the passing game, and then he pulls this out of the bag, and on a 3rd and 8, second quarter, you know, the Eagles scored a touchdown, they cut it to 10-7, and then they're driving again, and you know, it's 3rd down, 3rd and long, you know, your receivers are covered, there's pressure in the pocket, and he slips, slides, got to provide for 25 yards down the field, and it was just a great play for Hurts. So I'm, you know, he's making a fan of me every single week, more and more every single week, just from his leadership within the organization. I mean, you can just tell that, you know, there's a respect level with Hurts, you know, when it comes to just like man to man, and you know, you can tell like from his teammates, they'll talk about it. So, you know, obviously you don't know everything that goes on within the locker room, but I mean, he's saying all the right things, he's doing all the right things, and you know, it's those types of guys who have a little bit of special in them, and Jalen Hurts has a ton of that in terms of athletic gifts, and then you add in all the off the field stuff. You know, he's making a fan of me more and more every time, and it's not only with his legs, which I keep mentioning, which is the reason you love him so much. I mean, as of late, why he's becoming making more and more fan of me. You know, opening drive of the 3rd quarter is the one of the best I've seen from him in his career. He made 2 just great 3rd down throws where he stood in the pocket and just ate a pass rush to the face and made nice throws past the sticks. You know, he had one, you know, right in the middle of the field. He made just a great throw. And then there was another play where it was similar to that run I mentioned in the 2nd quarter. You know, he even said after the game he couldn't even hear the play call from Nick Sirianni. I think that was more due to a headset error than with the decibel level of the Washington football team crowd, because there was plenty of green in that stadium this weekend. So I think it was a little bit of a headphone malfunction there. However, in terms of the play, you know, kind of broke down 3rd and long. He evaded a couple guys, rolled out to the right, and, you know, Greg Ward got open and he found them 20 yards down the field within the 10-yard line. They go on to score from there. And, you know, it's a great play. And even on that play, it was 4th and goal, and Jason Kelce steps on Jalen Hurts' foot and he's falling down, but he still makes a clean pitch to Boston Scott for the touchdown. And just a great, great drive from Jalen Hurts. It's one of the best I've ever seen from him. Especially from where he came early in the year and last year. He's really, really improving on that end. And I just can't wait to see how he looks in the playoff, because, you know, being able to get some postseason experience under your belt in your first career, you know, this was the one thing with Wentz that, you know, a lot of people were struggling to kind of get behind. He just never played in the playoffs, really, although the Eagles were in the playoffs. Like I mentioned, they missed it last year, but for the past 5 years, the Eagles have been in the postseason. And you look at it, and you know, that was kind of the problem. You know, the Eagles are in the postseason 3-4 years in a row, or 3 years in a row, whatever the case may be. And you know, your starting quarterback, your franchise guy, hasn't played in a single one of them. And then, he finally gets in one, and you know, he misses the rest of that game. It's really tough. So I'm really hoping that Hurts starts, finishes this game, gets the whole game of experience, the whole work of preparation, all that stuff. Who knows, you know, maybe they win a game. Obviously, we'll talk about that a little bit more in the second topic. But in terms of just Jalen Hurts and where he comes from, like, there's so much about this player. And, you know, when he first came in, whatever the case may be, I may have said this, that, and the third. But, you know, I'm really changing my opinion on Jalen Hurts now, and especially with the capital that's, you know, kind of been stockpiled by the Philadelphia Eagles franchise. You know, people forget, you know, Jalen Hurts he's younger than, you know, most of these first-round projected quarterbacks in the draft this year. He's younger than them, so, or if not younger, the same age. So you're going to tell me you would rather trade this guy away or pick a quarterback in the first round this year with first-round picks? They got 3 of them, so, you know, with one of those 3, a lot of people want the Eagles to take a quarterback or something. You know, those people, it's like, well, you know, I get Kenny Pickett. You know, he's shown some things at Pittsburgh, and even some of the other guys, you know, the guy from Ole Miss, I can't even remember his name. Some of these guys haven't, you know, they've done a lot for themselves and for their schools, and, you know, they look very good. You know, that's why they're potential first-round picks, but there hasn't really been any of these generational talents that you hear about in high school that are now coming into the NFL. So, You give me a quarterback that's the same age, has been in the NFL already for 2 years. He started for just about a full season, a little bit over, and he has playoff experience, and the core around him is young, and you got a lot of talent, you got money coming off the books. Like, if the Philadelphia Eagles play this out right, they kind of can avoid, you know, coming over their mistakes made a couple years ago and everything that's happened with Howie Roseman, blah, blah, blah. You know, you can really start to see a way out of potentially, you know, and even the way out, how I'm kind of framing it as we were down in the dumps. We were down in the dumps, but at the same time, we missed the playoffs 1 year, and then this year we're back in the playoffs. The last 4 or 5 years, you're playing January football. Obviously, week 18 now, everyone's playing January football, but, you know, you're playing in tournament style. You just got to get in the dance, and when you see that, you know, especially in 2018, obviously 2017 was a much better year for the Philadelphia Eagles in the regular season, been a wild card every year since, except 2019 when they won the division against the Dallas Cowboys. However, when you look at it, you know, that's the one good thing that Howie Roseman has done. You know, his preferences, his, you know, football roster construction fetishes, if you will, is the line of scrimmage. And, you know, because we have such a good offensive line, because our defensive line is sturdy and, you know, they know what they're doing. Obviously, the loss of Brandon Graham has been really tough. But, you know, you got an offensive line with guys like Jason Kelce, Lane Johnson. You know, Jordan Mailata has been outstanding. And this is all without your highest paid offensive lineman, Brandon Brooks, has been out all year. You know, you think about what that does for a young player, especially just you're talking about 1, 2, 3 really, really good offensive linemen, and then you add in a guy like Brandon Brooks. It makes everything easier, especially for that fifth guy on the left side. I'm drawing a blank who has been out there. I know Landon Dickerson has been playing there a majority of the year. I feel like he's been filling in, though, here and there, because he did play center in college, Landon Dickerson, that is, at Alabama. So, you know, he's playing left guard right now off the COVID list, so we'll see him back there. And you just look at it, that is a ridiculous line. I mean, obviously, it's, you know, we're not calling it Dallas's offensive line of the mid-2010s, but, you know, it's definitely, you know, within the discussion. And you got to give a ton of credit to Jeff Stoutland, the offensive line coach here in Philadelphia. He is an absolute beast, and he's been, you know, teaching these guys up and making them the best versions of themselves. Obviously, you know, an NFL career could go any which way. You've seen first overall picks struggle and undrafted guys become Hall of Famers. So it really comes down to that coaching and Jeff Stoutland being able to coach Lane Johnson, being able to coach Jason Kelce, Brandon Brooks, Jason Peters for so many years, you know, all these guys. And you learn so much, and he's got so much to teach. And that's why I'm so excited about young guys like Landon Dickerson, Jordan Mailata, you know, really buying in and getting that experience with these Hall of Fame level players. And, you know, I say all that to say Jalen Hurts is in an amazing situation to succeed. You don't need, you're paying him nothing, and he is as good as a replacement level player. So you need to utilize the fact that you're not spending any money on Jalen Hurts and build the rest of your roster up. That way, maybe you do make a trade in a couple years for an older quarterback, you know, or a free agent, you know, whatever the case may be, and can go from there. That's what you did in 2017, building up the roster, and you had Carson on a rookie deal. So, you know, you get rid of Sam Bradford, you're paying all this money, you know, get a first-round pick, and you go with the young quarterback, you build up the rest of the roster, you know, you can catch lightning in a bottle. However, in terms of this year, you know, and next year and beyond, you know, you have a rare circumstance of having 3 first round picks and 4 in the top 50. So, you know, whatever the case may be, if there's a guy that, you know, something happens to him and he slides into the second round, you have a potential to get, you know, maybe 4 first round caliber talents. So with the terms of Jalen Hurts, he has proven to me. He doesn't need to prove it to me, but he's proven it to me. So, you know, that means he's swayed some people in the Philadelphia Eagles facility. You know, maybe he hasn't swayed the people he needs to sway in terms of guaranteeing him the position next year, but I think there's enough momentum of that occurring. So I'm really excited to see what happens with Jalen Hurts, not only in the playoffs this year, but down the road. And, you know, the thing that has been helping Jalen Hurts so much in his stint this year as starting quarterback has been the running game. 34 carries again yesterday, total for 118 yards. That's 3.47 per carry. Not as good a rushing day as you can ask for, and I say that, and they still run for 118 yards, actually. Washington only ran for 94, so they still out-gained their opponent on the ground. And it felt like a bad performance from the running game. I mean, just watching it, I mean, and you even look at the box score. Boston Scott, 14 carries for 47 yards. Not a great average, but he did score twice on the goal line. You know, Jalen Hurts, I mentioned, had 7 carries for 44 yards, made a numerous amount of good scrambles. So, you know, that ankle's feeling good. Then Jordan Howard, you know, 11 carries for 26 yards. Not great, but got some big, big, important yards down the stretch. And then 2 insignificant carries, really, to Kenneth Gainwell for 4 yards. And then Rager had an end around that he lost yardage on. And, you know, it was still another game of 115 yards, at least, for the Philadelphia Eagles rushing attack. And it appeared today as if the passing game was clicking a little bit more. So maybe they wanted to try to, you know, exploit that. There was a lot more throwing on early downs, which I mentioned it last week, how, you know, Nick Sirianni can sometimes get a little excited and want to throw so early in the game. But I think the Eagles did a good job marrying the run and the pass in the first half, where it gave Sirianni a little bit more leeway when he wanted to call some big throws in the second half. And, you know, it could also be attributed to Miles Sanders being out, especially with Jordan Howard also dealing with the stinger. You know, maybe he wanted to throw more to take a little bit of a strain off Boston Scott, who's not typically a, you know, lead bell cow back. And, you know, we've already talked about Kenneth Gainwell, the other running back in the room, and his struggles with pass protection, if you will. So, you know, him being in there makes tip off a defense. So, you know, it's tough to get a guy in there when they're doing that. So, you know, he's only had the one carry. So maybe that was one reason why Sirianni thought he had to rely on Jalen Hurts a little bit more. And, you know, we won a division game. Was it the prettiest game? Did they score the most yard, or did they count for the most yards? Did they look the best on third down? No. Did they have more first downs than the Washington? No. They run more plays than them? No. You know, did they have less penalty yardage than them? No. And they still come out with the win, 20-16. And, you know, it's a great win. I mean, you just, you know, like I said, I'm keep coming back. I keep harping on this very point. It's like, did they play their best game? No, but they got the win, and that's all that matters. So the rushing attack looked good. Jalen Hurts looked good. In terms of some other storylines coming out of the game that at least I had and some news that broke, Nate Herbig briefly left the game in the first half. It looked like he hurt his leg of you know, some nature. However, he did return and play the rest of the game, so we'll keep an eye out for there. A lot of names actually went on the COVID list on Monday. This is the big news in terms of how it affects the game next week against Dallas. Puts into a question, you know, a lot of regulars are in question here. So the players on the list, there is a decent amount of them, but I do kind of want to run through them once. Fletcher Cox and Jason Kelce off the offensive line, along with Jack Stoll, who is a tight end. Jannard Avery, linebacker. Dallas Goedert, obviously one of their tight ends. Boston Scott has also went on the list. Marcus Epps, Rodney McLeod. So two defensive guys there, Alex Singleton, Avante Maddox, another couple big defensive pieces as well, along with Nate Herbig on the offensive line and Jordan Howard. So you're talking about, you know, two of your last healthy running backs, you know, two of your tight ends, three of your offensive line, you know, the tight ends, cornerbacks, safeties, you know, all over the place. So it's going to be very interesting to see what the Philadelphia Eagles decide to do, and whether they, you know, sit a lot of their guys, or if they, you know, try to rush people through protocols to get them healthy enough to play the Cowboys, where the only thing really up for debate is the seeding at this point. So we'll see what happens there. There was some other notes that I wrote down. I did just want to kind of get off before we finish talking about the game, after I kind of went back and watched some of it. The one thing, Avante Maddox had one of the best games I've seen from him in his whole career on Sunday. He consistently came up with those huge, like, gotta-have-it tackles that just stalled drives. You know, his recent contract extension is looking like a very smart move from Howie Roseman. But Avante Maddox is just, he's killing it right now. And it's really good to see he's turned into a really, really good nickel corner. Really good in the slot. And, you know, just signed that contract extension. You know, he's got, you know, he's under contract for the next 4 years, you know, in that nickel position. And it is one thing I did want to mention. The draft, the 2018 draft in which Avante Maddox was signed, was a great time to be an Eagles fan at that time. A 2018 NFL draft, we're just coming off the Super Bowl. We're down in Dallas. David Akers is yelling at Cowboys fans. And it was just a great time to be an Eagles fan. And they low-key had a great, great draft that year. You know, we're really starting to see it now that these rookie contracts are starting to be up. But you take Dallas Goedert, 49th overall in the second round. Obviously, we had to part ways with Zach Ertz. But you re-sign Dallas Goedert to a big money contract. He looks like a stud. Then, in the fourth round, you go Avante Maddox at 125. And you take Josh Sweat at 130. Overall, that was both fourth round picks. You re-signed both of those guys to 3-year contracts. So you're talking about two starters on your defensive end. Obviously, Josh Sweat, a rotational D end, but someone who looks really good, had 1.5 sacks yesterday against the football team. You know, he kind of slipped in the draft because of some injuries, but he has totally landed in a great spot and he's looked great and he's got paid because of it. So him, Dallas Goedert, Avante Maddox, all signed contract extensions with the team. You also have a guy you took in the sixth round, Matt Pryor, who started playoff games for the Eagles, was really good depth. I believe he's on Detroit now. He might be on a different team. I guess I can look that up real quick. I have the computer in front of me, so let me just see exactly where he is. He's actually with the Colts now. So he's with the Colts now. He went there. This is his first year there. So he was pretty good. He's playing tackle now. He's played in 5 games, or started 5 games this year exactly for them. So, you know, a good offensive lineman on a good team with a good offensive line in Indy. So you talk about a good pick there in the 6th round. And then in the 7th round, the home run pick of them all, Jordan Mailata. You're talking about Dallas Goedert, Avante Maddox, Josh Sweat, and Jordan Mailata, who have all signed second contracts with the team that signed them, which is very, it happens sometimes, but it doesn't happen as much as you may think. And 4 players who are being paid as at a premium position and are being paid premium prices for that too. So just, you hit on 2 defensive starters and 2 offensive starters in the same draft. I just wanted to give a little bit of a tip of the nod, a little tip of the cap to Howie Roseman for that draft, because he does get a lot of flack for, some of his moves, and I've given him plenty of flack, but he does need to be rewarded with some praise in certain circumstances, as the 2018 draft was one of those circumstances that he did a really good job. Another note I did want to mention was I love the aggressiveness from head coach Nick Sirianni on 4th down specifically. There was a couple of specific examples that I'll get to that I love to call them. But I just want to say we went for it on 4th down 4 times. And just for some perspective on that, the Eagles went 4 of 12 on 3rd down. So on 4 of those misses, on 3rd down, we went for it on 4th. We converted on 3 of them. The first one we did not convert on. 4th and 2 from Washington's 24-yard line with 7 minutes to go in the first quarter. It was right after Washington scored to go 7-0. They had a lot of momentum. And it was 4th and 2 at their own 24. We were in field goal range, but I trusted the guys to get 2 yards. And they almost did. Jordan Howard almost got it, but he got stuffed. I love the call, though, because even though you're turning it over on downs, Washington is only at their own 24-yard line. So in terms of where you got the ball and where the Eagles got the ball was their own 25-yard line because of the kickoff, obviously, after the touchdown. It's pretty much like you're flipping the field. So I don't mind it, especially early in the game where, there's still a lot of time to bounce back. And there was time to bounce back, but those decisions needed to also be made on 4th down. Another one he went for was a 4th and goal from Washington's 1-yard line with 11 minutes and 45 seconds to go in the second quarter. You're already down 10-0 at this point. I loved the call. At some point, you got the best offensive line in the league. You got the best rushing attack. If you can't get a yard, you don't deserve those titles. So especially against this Washington football team with a beat-up defensive line, COVID issues, whatever the case may be, you got to punch that in, and they did, especially with Boston Scott back there to cut the lead to 10-7. And then there was another one, a 4th and 1 from Washington's 42-yard line with 5:30 to go in the fourth quarter. This is when boys become men, and this is when the nut crunching happens. And there's 5:30 to go. It's 4th down. Ball's near midfield. You only got a 1-point lead at the time. It's 17-16, 5:30 to go in the fourth. 4th and 1, what are you going to do? QB sneak with Jalen Hurts. You get the first down, you milk the clock down, and you give the ball back to Washington after you hit your own field goal to make it a 2-possession game. Absolutely loved the call there. Now, if they don't get it, you might not love the call as much, but the key differentiation there is you just didn't like the result as much. I love the call. You know, whenever a fourth down call happens, I love to try to make a split second decision when I'm just sitting there in the room and saying if I like it or not. That way I can, you know, not be biased as terms of, you know, having the result in front of me to, you know, maybe having my thinking change about how I would have thought in a certain circumstance because I know the result. No, I like to get my thoughts out beforehand to, you know, make it independent of the result, because that way you can really work on the process of how you're thinking about a given, you know, decision. And you know, if you do the process over and over again, you really start to perfect that, then you'll start to see results that you really, really like. And, you know, that's one thing that, you know, especially being in, you know, sports statistics and, you know, watching this, that, and third, you know, especially with certain analysts, you know, you try to predict certain things. You know, history tends to repeat itself. That's one of my favorite sayings. And if you can start to understand the history, do the process right every single time, the results will follow. Obviously, you know, John Harbaugh of Baltimore has been getting a lot of flack from this. You know, he went for two straight weeks when the PAT would have won or tied the game, gone to overtime. The two-point conversion would have won the game. However, he decided to go for two. And it was probably the right call in both circumstances. You could have won the game with that two-point conversion both times. They just didn't get them. And when you look at it, obviously they're fighting for a playoff spot right now. They need a lot of help. You know, they're 8-8 still, so they need the Colts to lose, the Steelers to lose, and then win themselves to potentially get in. So, you know, but then again, they could be 10-8 if those decisions go their way and they're clinched. You know what I mean? So it's just a little, you just have to kind of make that decision beforehand and, you know, live with the results. I totally agree with John Harbaugh in those scenarios. That was one of those times where I, you know, liked it. And you just have to be willing to live with the result is kind of what I'm going with in this little tangent there. I know totally kind of went away from not just, you know, specifically the Eagles game, but just kind of some general, you know, theory in terms of, you know, what you want to get to. It's really important to kind of make sure your process is sound. It's especially, you know, when we talk about something like fourth down and in an NFL game. Whoa. Kind of went crazy there. But you talk about fourth down in an NFL game, you know, that's those situations that present themselves in sports that, you know, you can kind of use in other areas. And, you know, you can really learn about, you know, what you think about a certain experience or a certain event that takes place. So just really interesting to see kind of how it happened there. And it worked for the Eagles. They went for it. They got first down. They kicked the field goal, make it a two-possession game, which forced the football team to really push the ball down the field when they easily made it into field goal range. So talk about if you don't get that third down, Washington kicks a three there up. And, you know, in our world, we get the first down, we go down, we make it a two-possession game, and then Heinicke has to throw the ball down the field. What do you know? Interception, Rodney McLeod, game over, because they have to go for six instead of kick the three to take the lead and win the game. So really interesting discussion there, but just really kind of wanted to talk about that in relation to the Eagles game. But that's going to kind of wrap up our thoughts on the Birds game. And now we're going to move to our second topic of the day, which is a look around the NFL and talk about some teams who clinched playoff berths in week 17 and also about how the AFC and NFC picture are looking going into the last week of the season. So there's only two divisions up for grabs now, as six of the eight divisions have been claimed, but the only two have not, you know, been named a winner yet are the NFC West and the AFC East. Other than that, the only spots up for grabs are still in the wild card area of both of the conferences, with one in the NFC and potentially two in the AFC, depending on what happens there. So in the AFC specifically, Buffalo is going to host the New York Jets, and New England is going to go down to Miami, and whoever wins this game, I believe, wins the division. If the Bills win, they get the division, no matter what. They have a tiebreaker over New England based on winning percentage in division games. Buffalo's 4-1 in the division, and New England is 3-2 in the division. They both play divisional opponents, so obviously if the Bills win, they'd be 5-1. If they lost and New England won, then obviously New England would win because they both have, or excuse me, then New England would be 11-6 and Buffalo would only be 10-7. So I say all that to say Buffalo plays New York and the Patriots play the Dolphins, and The Buffalo Bills are actually home against their matchup, and New England has to go on the road, so we'll see what happens there. There are a lot worse places to go on the road than Miami in January, I will say that, but it's still going to be a tough road game for New England. How do I handicap it? I mean, you got to think Buffalo's the favorite here. You got to think against the Jets. Let me pull these spreads up here. What do we got here? Here we go. Buffalo, 16-point favorites. Oof. We got New England as 6.5-point favorites against Miami. Miami's been a little bit of an enigma this year. They won 7 games in a row, and they've also lost 7 games in a row. So you talk about that. That's 14 weeks, right? NFL seasons have only been 17 weeks, 16 games. So you talk about having two different streaks that long. Really shows you how crazy their year was. But, you know, they did beat up on a lot of poor teams, let's just say. You know, a lot of Jacksonville, New York Jets, a lot of these teams, Houston Texans, a lot of these teams that are a little bit lower in the standings. So how do I handicap it? I really think both teams are going to win. I know that's kind of a soft answer to give, but in that circumstance, the Buffalo Bills would clinch the division. And, you know, I think the Buffalo Bills have – I don't know. I think they have a better quarterback, which raises their ceiling. But in terms of overall roster, I may take the Patriots. However, at the same time, you know, Buffalo Bills are serious Super Bowl contenders. They were in the AFC Championship game last year. So I'd love to see them grow on that and potentially face a Tennessee in round two or a Kansas City or something like that and have them, you know, a great playoff matchup. So we'll see what happens there. But that's kind of the circumstance for the AFC East. In terms of the AFC wildcard, this is where it gets a little bit crazy. The Las Vegas Raiders host the Los Angeles Chargers in a win or go home scenario. This is the Sunday night game, the last game of the NFL regular season, and whoever wins gets in to a wildcard spot, no matter what. No matter what else happens, whoever wins between that matchup gets one of the wildcard spots. However, there is a lot of other interesting things that could take place. The Indianapolis Colts are currently sitting at 10-6, and they are in the – or excuse me, my fault. The 6, 7, and 8 seeds are all 9-7, with the Colts being the 6 seed right now at 9-7, and then you have the Chargers and Raiders who are 7-8. But if one team wins, one team loses, obviously only one team gets in and goes to 10-7, so they would get a wild card slot. In terms of the Colts, they go to Jacksonville this week, so if they win, they're in no matter what. They hold the tiebreakers over the Chargers, Raiders, everybody. So if they win, they go 10-7. And with the potential to maybe move up if the Patriots lose, I don't know how, but the tiebreakers would work there. But if one of those teams loses and goes to 10-7, the Colts, there's obviously some more tiebreakers that are going to come in there. But there is a scenario where the Colts lose and the Steelers win, and they go to Baltimore. So they got a really tough game there. They're currently, 5.5-point underdogs going to Baltimore for the last game of the year. And if they win, by virtue of that tie against the Lions, they would be 9-7, and in that circumstance, the Colts at 9-8 would drop out of the playoffs. So there's some interesting things to decide there. The Baltimore Ravens are also 8-8. The winner, Pittsburgh is 8-7 and Baltimore is 8-8. So if Baltimore wins and goes to 9-8, they win the division and by virtue of that get in the playoffs. So while they are the 11th seed in the conference right now, they still have a chance to make the playoffs. I believe the Pittsburgh-Baltimore game is a winner takes the division. So neither one of them is really in the play for the wild card because if Baltimore lost, it'd be 8-9, and if Pittsburgh lost, they'd be 8-8. So those two teams are fighting for that division. My apologies there. So we'll see what happens, but there's a lot more intrigue in the AFC to break down, and it's going to go crazy. There's a lot of big matchups there. There's a lot of big scores to watch and some good things going on. In terms of the NFC, that is where it is a little bit more subdued because, of course, the Philadelphia Eagles already clinched our playoff spot last week, so we are in no matter what, despite being in the 7 seed right now. The San Francisco 49ers currently sit in the number 6 because, if you recall, San Francisco came into the link earlier in the year and beat the Philadelphia Eagles, so they hold the tiebreaker over us. However, there is a scenario where the 49ers could miss the playoffs outright. The Eagles obviously are going to win. Even if they lose, they still clinch a playoff spot. But in terms of outside the Eagles, you got the Saints at 8-8 right now. The Saints go to Atlanta. Okay, so let's say Saints win 9-8, right? If San Fran loses, they go to 9-8, and by virtue of a tiebreaker rule, the Saints would actually get in over the 49ers. They actually hold the tiebreaker over the 49ers. And then even if the Eagles lost, they're still 9-8, right? And what do the Eagles have? The tiebreaker over the Saints based off their win early in the year. So there's a scenario where the 49ers lose. You know, they're currently the sixth seed right now. There's a chance that they lose and miss the playoffs altogether. In that circumstance, the Eagles would move up to the number six seed, and the New Orleans Saints would move up to the number seven seed. Now, if the Eagles win, they move up to the sixth seed no matter what. Or excuse me, that's false. If the Eagles win and the 49ers win, either way, basically the only outcome for the Eagles here is if the Eagles win, you know, that game, that result might not mean anything. So we can look at that and, you know, not even think about it. The 49ers have to lose. If the 49ers lose, the Eagles jump up to the 6. 49ers win, the Eagles stay at the 7. Pretty much how it works there. And if everyone wins, you know, we stay in. Even if the Saints win and we lose, we still hold the tiebreaker over them. So that's why the Eagles have already clinched. So like I said, I just rambled, probably went in and out of all this as I was figuring it out live on air here. However, there is a lot to still look at and watch this week in the NFL in the season finale. All right, everybody, that's going to wrap it up. Just to put a bow on the show, please hit that subscribe button if you enjoyed what we talked about today. Also, if you enjoyed the podcast as a whole, please leave a 5-star review on the platform you're listening on. It would really mean a lot, and it would help the podcast reach new audiences. If you want to follow us on social media, check the description below. I hope you all enjoyed, and I can't wait to see you back here again next time. I am your host, Noah Gillian, but hey, this is just one man's opinion.